Welcome to another episode of Nomads, the HCI podcast. I'm Sani.
And I'm Connie.
And today we have Sanika, who's a HCI professional pursuing her PhD in computer science with a specialization in UX of augmented and virtual reality spaces. And she is an unstoppable go-getter. She has worked with companies like Disney and Salesforce and has an entrepreneurial mindset geared towards solving problems faced in society today.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, welcome. We were so excited to meet you and have you on our podcast today. So when we were going through your portfolio, I noticed that you harness storytelling for your introduction, and you have a really incredible and enthusiastic and an energetic personality. And it's really amazing how you're able to present these like very niche and technical projects, especially with your background in computer science related to AR and VR, in a way that's really digestible and fun for a lot of people. So how did you come up with this idea? You know, there's a video of you called CEO of My Life, or Be the CEO of Your Life, that I think shows so much of your wonderful personality. And so I just want to know, like, how did you come up with this concept?
It just began from the thought that nobody has time to actually know my story. It's a 5-year story that I told in 1 minute. I covered it into the 1 minute video. And okay, the only goal was that I just wanted to share that I am very passionate about design, and I've worked really hard to get from engineering to UX design, and that's what I captured in my 1 minute video. And the joke of being the CEO of my own life is basically I started taking decisions of my own life. I started driving the own vehicle of my life. So that's all about it. And my whole portfolio and all the projects, I kind of wrote it in a way that a 7-year-old can understand. So I just wanted to make it simple.
I mean, you really succeeded. You did a great job with it.
Yeah, and we are so happy to have you, Sanika. And coming from India, I could personally relate with your journey and with your video as well. Even for me, people said you either have to be an engineer or a doctor or a loser. So I chose to come here and pursue my dream. So for you, what is the hardest thing so that you never gave up and chase your dreams when everyone around you is kind of advising you against it, especially being a woman in India?
Okay, yeah, that's a deep question. So, I come from Mumbai, India. It's a big city with too many people. And I come from a very middle-class family. My dad is a musician. My mom is a homemaker. And both of them have raised me and my brother equally and given us opportunities to do well in college and like studies and everything. But the thing is that we need to understand this, because India is such a populated place, there is always competition for everything. So I think the competitive mindset is somehow planted in the child from the very beginning. If you want to get something, you really need to work hard, or these are the only ways to get ahead in life. And I didn't give a second thought. I just followed what I was told. I took computer engineering. And then after finishing my engineering, I came to United States to pursue my master's in computer science. But after coming here, when I saw the real world, or maybe how everything actually works in the whole world, I just felt that I cannot be a software engineer for 40 years of my life. This is just not fair to me, and I won't be happy. I'm so creative. I want to explore that creative side of me. And at that time, it was kind of late. My parents had invested a lot of money in my studies, so I just couldn't leave my master's degree. And then I started exploring which are the other fields that are creative, that's connected to computer science, that can, you know, bring that happiness in my life. So I went into game development for a while, and I started loving game development. And that's when I met my professor, under whom I'm doing my PhD right now. And I joined her lab. And that time she bought a virtual reality headset in the lab, and that really attracted me, that, okay, this is a new tool. Let's do something with it. And during that time, while searching on LinkedIn and online, what are the other sources where I can be more creative in computer science, I found user experience design. And that was the joy of my life. Like, yes, finally, I found a stream that matches what I really like, and I can build a career in that. So having virtual reality headset in my lab and seeing a career in UX design, I thought, let's just combine this, make a project and see where it goes. And yeah, since 2015, I think I haven't looked back. I've just worked hard, you know, worked on many different projects, tried researching virtual and augmented reality user experience design space. And yeah, this is my journey.
That was amazing, Sanika. You and I come from a middle-class family, and I did my undergrad in Bachelor of Technology, just like everyone else in India, I guess.
Yeah, I think for one thing, I think it's amazing that you have that go-getter attitude. You know, like me personally, I am not of that kind of personality. You know, I think I sit and wait a lot more. Maybe that's part of my culture and identity. And so it's actually very interesting to hear about how that part of you has formed your personality, but also that you broke free of like some of the expectations that persona and that identity had for you, right? Like you wanted to explore creativity. And I think being a creative person myself, both my parents are also engineers, and I disappointed them with my humanities and liberal arts degree. But you know, I think it's incredible. And I think the world can use and does use and needs people like ourselves who have a technical understanding, but have a creative way to express it and be able to solve problems, right? Problem solving in this space is a lot about, especially in human-computer interaction, about interdisciplinary perspective, about how do I solve and reframe this problem and create a new solution. And talking a little bit about your AR/VR experience, I noticed that you did a master thesis on AR/VR, right? And it was called Augma. Augma? I'm maybe pronouncing that wrong. But yes, it was, I think it's about teaching the Swedish language and like language acquisition in general. So I'm really curious because I have never seen virtual reality applied to language learning, which is a lot about like sitting in a classroom, repetition, having awkward dialogue conversations that are pre-scripted because people are afraid of actually talking casually in language learning. So I'm kind of curious, for one, like, what was it like to use VR for language learning? And do you think it could be mainstream in like classrooms and for learning new languages? Like, do you imagine a future? If not, like, why? Like, what are some challenges?
Okay. So I told you in 2015, when I joined this lab, I got this virtual reality Oculus DK2. It was new at that time because Facebook had just acquired Oculus, and it was the buzzword going all around the internet. So that was new. Secondly, I found UX design. So I thought, let's combine UX design with this virtual reality project that I have and apply those user experience design principles and make it like a very user-centered process. So the idea was that I wanted to make a project using virtual reality to solve a real-world problem. So one of the problem, like, I worked on this project with an undergraduate intern in my lab. So we were discussing, and this problem was, okay, so there is a thing known as immersion. Immersion is a technique. So for example, if you want to learn German, you go to Germany, stay there for a year, immerse yourself in the environment, and then you learn that language with all its cultural and, you know, just by being in the space. So we just thought that this is very time consuming. It can be dangerous if you want to, for example, learn Syrian language from Syria. So there are so many different factors. You have to leave your job. It's not financially possible all the time. So virtual reality can replace this immersion technique. That was the idea. And we had no way of knowing because it wasn't tested at that time. So we started on doing this iterative design cycle. Like, first we created like a design prototype, tested it with users, and refined it. And we conducted an A-B testing. One was a traditional method. So, you know, the normal way of learning a new language is by reading those flashcards. English is written on one side and the other language is written, and you just test yourself. That's one technique. And the other one was virtual reality. So the idea was that we had placed 10 objects in a space, in an apartment space in virtual reality. And you have to go around the space, look at the object. And when you look at the object, you can see the name, how what it's called, and how it sounds like. So as you go around the space, you can immerse yourself, get the real, experience of the space and learn the new language. And the reason we chose Swedish was that the undergraduate intern knew Swedish language. So that's why, just for the ease of having the language, we use Swedish. And then we tested. So the way we tested is that we brought in the users and we asked half of them to use the traditional flashcard method, and we told half of them to use virtual reality method. And we told them, and after they completed the experience, they had a questionnaire, like a test to solve. Like there were 10 English words and they had to write 10 Swedish words for those. And we called them after 1 week again, and we just gave them the test. So what we found that between the two tests, like 1 week, like the test that they gave immediately after the experiment and 1 week later, we found that the traditional learning, the scores were higher. People remembered more. But when they came after 1 week, the scores like decreased. So if a person in the traditional method got 8 out of 10, when he came back, he just got 2 out of 10. Whereas in virtual reality, if they remembered 4 words, they actually remembered 4 words after they came back after a week. So this means that virtual reality helps you learn subconsciously, because it gives you that experience of learning or like by being in the space. That experience is so real, because humans are graphical creatures. And so that's the thing, when we look at pictures, we remember well. But virtual reality creates a 360-degree experience that becomes subconsciously embedded in you. And that was the whole finding of my project. So, okay, coming back to your other question, virtual reality. I see virtual reality to be very promising in the space of medical training, or any kind of training and games and... yeah, that's it. I don't see it getting streamlined anytime sooner, because it has very high barrier to adoption. You need to have certain kind of glasses. Not everyone is comfortable with the experience, that 360 degree. There's still latency and hardware problems. So there's still a long way to go for virtual reality.
Yeah, and I have looked into this project. As a UX researcher, I loved it. So coming to virtual reality, in 2016, I tried, HTC Vive or some of the HMDs, and they were terrible. They gave me motion sickness and stuff. So none of them, were ready for commercial adoption. But here we are in 2020, wherein Oculus Quest, I tried it for more than a week, and it was completely immersive. I didn't know what was happening around me. I lost touch with the real world. So, you also worked on AR platform as well. There has been a lot of fight between AR versus VR people in the industry, as well as the users. So where do you see that going, and what do you think about it? So will AR become mainstream, or will VR become mainstream very soon?
I think AR has huge potential to become mainstream way before virtual reality, because it's very easy to adopt. It's there on your mobile phones. And as soon as the glasses are made, it will be very, very easy for everyone to use AR applications. Okay, so I just want people who don't know virtual and augmented reality. Virtual reality is basically you are replacing your whole view with some virtual view. So you are probably in a different space. But augmented reality is something that you're adding a virtual layer in your current setting. So if you're living in a living room, if you're sitting in a living room and you see a tiger walking by, that's augmented reality, because that tiger is a virtual object. So having these kind of applications is very easy for users to adopt. There is one thing in HCI that humans really like easy things. Like they get attracted to applications that are easy to use or easy to understand and low barrier to understand. So as we saw in Pokemon Go, it was a huge hit all around the world because it was so easy. Yeah. And augmented reality has many more applications, more than phone and headphones. You can see cars, these self-driving cars can have glass shields with augmented reality displays, or tangible surfaces or walls, or all these are different applications where augmented reality can be a hit.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But I just have one more question about that thing. Since we already have a commercial VR that is successful and being sold at maybe 500 or 600 bucks in the United States, but we still don't see AR HMDs available, although there is one rumored by Apple since 2016. You know, being in that field, when do you predict, a commercial AR HMD would come out?
I have heard rumors that Apple is creating their AR headset and Google is also working on something. But it's okay. It's just a matter of time. As soon as there is a hardware available, there will be a bunch of applications ready for it. So as HCI professionals, I think we shouldn't wait for the hardware to come. We should already start thinking about what the design paradigm would be like. What are the ethical uses of it? How to make it more inclusive, accessible to people, or how can we design for just better usability? So we shouldn't let's not wait for the hardware to come. Let's just start designing for it.
I think your point about adoption is very, very validated in society. There's research going on about using AR VR spaces in smart classrooms, for example, right? And I remember many, many moons ago, like finding this YouTube video. I think it was by Hyundai, maybe some like car ad about like drawing on windows, for example, like using AR technology. So it's interesting to see and to hear that, like, that there's very particular applications like medicine and training that you mentioned before. I do know of some people who use it. And actually, I remember when I first started learning about VR spaces that there's actually somewhere in Mexico, I believe, some sort of country where local anesthesia medicines are not available, and that they actually use VR as a local anesthesia replacement, which is kind of interesting considering that just shows like how easy the brain is to fool and how much our visual, like what you were saying about humans being very graphic based and like visual creatures, is so real. And that just goes back to what I'm sure you learned in your language master thesis, right? The fact that people are very visual creatures, and like why isn't our education like emphasizing this, you know? And in talking about things like education and language, going on to like broader social kind of issues, right? I saw that you also have another project that you worked on in light of COVID, called At Your Service. Very charming video as well, and very informative video about like the business proposition, the value it can bring, you know, really focusing on the stakeholders. And also I really appreciated the focus on small and mid business owners and individuals, especially because COVID pandemic has impacted so many people, right? And so I noticed that you're so deeply passionate about these like big social inequities and big social issues through using technology. So I'm kind of wondering too, like, what is the inspiration for that project? And how do you think we as HCI professionals can help eliminate those economic, socioeconomic inequities like through HCI?
So this project At Your Service, okay, this is not an augmented or virtual reality project. It's just a normal mobile phone application. But the idea came from, I saw a post about this competition. It was a global innovation design challenge hosted by UMO Design. And the prompt was what design for lockdown, like the problems that has arisen due to lockdown, and also design for something that can stay even after the pandemic or lockdown has gone. So come up with an application to help the society and people. So it was a very, very broad and open problem statement that just find a problem and solve it. And we were a team of five people. So me, my brother, who is a final year engineering student, and there were three MBA students that I worked with. And we just started discussing and coming up with a list of problems of what can we solve. And there are so many problems that have come due to pandemic. So it was very difficult to narrow down to one single thing. We knew that we want to solve some social problem that has a huge impact, but it was so difficult to come down to one thing. So I saw a video about Elon Musk. He talks about first principles thinking. And first principles thinking is that breaking down any complex thing into the nitty gritty or the molecular atomic level of it. So, for example, this is from Elon Musk's example, that when he had this talk with his investors that he wanted to manufacture or get low priced lithium batteries for his cars. The investors said that it's very costly. We cannot afford it. So he said, okay, let's do this thing. What are these lithium batteries made up of? So it's made up of iron ore, these two, three chemicals. Let's get that and let's make our own lithium batteries. And that's how he brought the cost of those batteries down, by just using the first principles thinking. So the way that we started brainstorming ideas is that what is the basic things a human needs? So that's food, clothing, water, shelter, and internet. These are those few things. Then what makes a life sustainable? The meditation apps, entertainment, the social groups. So these are the other application. But there was another layer that we found out that helps people getting their basic needs like food, clothing, and shelter. That is the essential layer. That supply chain, agriculture, manufacturing. These are those sections that were critically hit by pandemic. And we thought if we can focus on this layer, we can solve the problem of getting people their basic needs, and that can help them live a happy life. So that's why we chose the problem of solving small scale businesses, because they were hit, their shops were closed, they couldn't sell, and it just started. So UX design, or the field of human computer interaction, is that we should start with humans, and that's what we did. We started off with just talking to people. We had a survey. We got a lot of responses. And I told my brothers that they were in India and I was here. We were working remotely. So I told them, just go out and start speaking to these small scale business owners. What problems are they facing? And just by talking to them, we started getting so many ideas that, okay, yeah, the biggest problem is that people are scared of going out. There's curfew. They are not allowed to go out. And there is a problem that many of their workers have gone back to villages. So they don't have those workforce to work for these small shops. So we thought of making a human Uber. You can just book any person for their service to transport things from point A to point B, or get medicines home, or just help in some delivery. So that was the idea, and that's how we solved.
That's amazing. And also in India, the tech adoption is pretty low. To empower or create employment for people below poverty line through technology is the major problem that At Your Service has solved, I think. It also told that we can do user research remotely and very efficiently as well.
Yeah, it's all about speaking with the users and getting to know what their real problems are. I think all the best ideas just comes from users' problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, we should always go from user to technology. That's what Steve Jobs said maybe 20 years ago. And now switching gears, now we have talked about your experience with AR, VR, and your experience with societal problems and how you addressed it using your design thinking. And you have also worked at Salesforce, wherein the stakeholders were people with high technical knowledge. So you have worked with multiple technologies for multiple stakeholders, and yet you aced at everything. So what is your secret here?
When I decided to switch from software engineering, like my track in computer science, to UX design, the minute that I thought that I want to switch track, suddenly my resume became empty. I had nothing to show. And when a person has nothing to show, somehow it's very empowering, because now I don't have anything to lose. So I started rebuilding myself, and so this is the one thing that I did. I switched my mindset to become a learner forever. So I just accepted the fact that I don't know anything. Let's deal with it. Let's try it. Let's read about it. Just let's see the video. And that's how I started gaining so much knowledge from every direction, that didn't stop me, or that didn't frighten me to go in different avenues. So when I did the virtual reality project, I knew nothing about virtual reality. But I just had this thing, let's try. If it fails, I'll have something else. When I went to Disney, I worked on augmented reality projects. And that was a different experience, working in industry for the first time. And that too, such a big company, and working on augmented reality. And then when I went to Salesforce, it was a completely very, very, very complex technical environment where people just worked on these very, very complex developer tools and platforms. So again, it was a learning curve, but the mindset that I had that it's new, let's start, helped me survive, I think, through all these years.
I love the one, the little bit at the end, yes. But also, I think it's really refreshing to hear, just like it said so blatantly out loud, like, I had nothing, like, I started from nothing, right? I think, especially for any listeners out there who might be people just interested in HCI and UX and product design, or like literally any other field, right? You're in one field, you want to jump to another, you find something you want to try. I've definitely been in that place where I'm like, I literally have no idea what this field is. I don't have the skill sets. I don't understand what's going on. Like, what are these terms? Everyone's throwing like acronyms, HCI, UX, what do these all mean? And it can be very overwhelming. And I think if anyone out there is also like myself, or even you guys who are perfectionists, or like you want to produce like really good work, right? Like the fear of like wanting to be like top tier, really want to produce good quality work to show people, I think that can stop a lot of people from even just trying something, right? And so to hear your story about like to switch from mastery, essentially, right? You knew a lot of computer science, you had a background in that, you had expertise, and then to switch from a master to a learner forever is like such a great soundbite, right? And there's like one of my favorite quotes that like reminds me when I'm kind of just staring at a project going like, oh, if I start it, I'll probably make mistakes, so I don't want to start it. But that one quote that's like, it's like the master has failed 100 more times than the beginner has tried, right? Or thousands or millions or some crazy number, right? And I think that speaks so much to like how actually like human-computer interaction is about, right? We talk about iterative design. We talk about how we're always trying to create something better, a better experience, a better future. And that requires a lot of failure and a lot of falling down, but getting back up. And that's why it's an iterative process, not a one-way ticket to gold, you know? It's not like the end of the rainbow, you know? It's continuous waves of learning, always like roaming around. Like that's what we're here on this podcast for, right? We're also always learning, no matter what field we go to, no matter what sort of new idea we want to pursue. We are taking everything that we know and being bold, going out of a comfort zone, just gunning for it, just trying to see what is over there. And that's exactly what this podcast was about, which, you know, funny thing.
I am a very huge fan of hard work. So I think hard work trumps talent. If you're not talented, that's enough. I mean, that's okay. You can achieve anything through hard work and having a very strategic plan towards getting whatever you want. And I'm a big student of probability. So I just love throwing the die again and again until I get a six. So that's another thing that we need to keep in mind, that it's just a matter of getting that one time. That's it. So you just keep trying as much as you can. I know all this sounds really good in podcast. I've listened to hundreds of podcasts, and when you're down in life, nothing works. But if you can listen to the sound in your head, just keep trying again and again. And the second thing is that human-computer interaction, the field of HCI, is so diverse. People come from so many backgrounds and they bring different strengths. So if I come from engineering, I used to feel very inferior, that I come from engineering, I don't know anything about design. But as through the years when I was working, I just found that I don't have a weakness. Actually, I have a strength. I have a strength to speak with developers. I have a strength to understand the technological difficulties and capabilities. So everyone comes with their unique skill set and strengths. So I think learning about different domains can also help you have empathy towards yourself and also others. So when I came into design and I just started learning from different domains, I learned from architecture, fashion design, interior design, theatrics, because these are all the different areas of design that have this simple core element that is user focused. Everyone designs for users. So if we start understanding this from the very core, I think HCI can be cakewalk.
Yeah, one example is we starting this podcast and we think as HCI professionals at the end of the day. So when we are trying to interview our guests, we use the principles of user interviews, or everything adds up together. And coming out of our comfort zone or overcoming our fear every day, that is something I'm doing personally since COVID. I'm trying to learn every day something new. Lifelong learning is something I realized would help me. And I used to believe talent or creativity is good enough for me. But, with hard work, the results are like augmenting to maybe 100 times more.
I think another thing that you highlighted too, which was thinking that your weaknesses or things that you're not good at are weaknesses, but they're actually strengths. And I think that also speaks to why collaboration is so important in our field as well, right? Like you mentioned, like if I were on your team, I would not be able to cover your bases, but you may be able to cover mine. Oh, wait, no, wait, scratch that. I may be able to cover some of your bases and you'll be able to cover some of my bases. And maybe Sunny's able to cover other things that we are missing as well, right? I think that's the greatness of this field, that like high level of richness that is available. And because it's so human-centric, it's also human-centric when we enter the field, right? I love the part about you like listening to that voice in your head, because you are also your own user in your own life. Maybe that's one way to think about it, right? Like, how would you design the best life for you, right? What would you do? What would you tell yourself? What experience do you want? I think that's kind of an interesting like thought process, maybe. You know, if you don't think you can do it, like, what if you were your user? Would you tell them that? I don't think so.
Exactly. So once you're a UX user experience designer, you can UX your career, you can UX your life, you can UX your portfolio, you can UX anyone.
UX your boyfriend, I mean.
Exactly. It's just about understanding where the problem lies and how to fix it in an iterative fashion. Nothing happens in one go.
Yeah, it's all about problem solving for humans, I think, especially, and it starts from myself. So if I don't use a product that I design, I can't say someone else, would use it at the end of the day.
Business is also one thing that every UX professional should be aware of, because I think HCI professionals are a bridge between business and technology. So as much as it's important to understand the technological capabilities of whatever we are designing, you also need to understand how this is going to help get money or get investment or build a profitable, I don't know, business or something. Like, for at the end of the day, every company isn't for a profit, and we work at companies. So we also need to be aware of where this is going along with helping the users. So I think we are actually very powerful people if we use our skills in the right place with all the right tools and techniques. And as you said, Connie, collaboration is the key for any HCI professional.
Something that we're trying to do here on the Nomads podcast is kind of leave up behind an artifact of wisdom that you would like to leave with all our listeners. You've obviously spit so much wisdom. Like, I've been taking notes quite personally on the side, because there's just some great quotes in here that I think I need plastered on my wall when I move out of here. And when also COVID decides to calm down a little bit, or when the US decides, cut that out. But I guess, from everything that you've told us and from everything that you've shared with us, what is like one piece of wisdom that you want people to leave this podcast with?
Life is exactly what you think it is. I want to repeat, life is exactly what you think it is. So this is a very, 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 very deep thought, that it's basically your own subconscious building your own life. So if you think you want to reach somewhere and you think about it day in, day out, day, like every day, you work towards it, I think you'll reach there. There's no stopping. There's only noise in the world that keeps you listening to your inner voice. But it's just that belief or the faith in yourself that life is exactly what you think it is.
I totally agree. And this is a deep philosophical thought. Yet very simple, if you take it to your head, I think. Coming to the last question, or maybe about the theme of the podcast, how do you see yourself as a nomad?
Oh, nomad. I see myself as a CEO of my own life. So I think every CEO is a nomad in their own world. You need to make your own decisions. You need to stick by it, take measures, like take actions, measure it. And I think nomads are people, very free-willed people. They just set their minds on something and go and achieve it. And then they think, okay, where to go next? So it's very impromptu, I think, and very, very full of life kind of a thing. So just enjoy. The biggest thing is that as a nomad, just enjoy whatever you do. And once you find that enjoyment, I think life will be awesome. Because I have changed my life since past 5 years from engineering to UX. And I think I am a living testament that you can get whatever you want if you really set your heart to it.
Absolutely. As Steve Jobs says, do what you love and love what you do every day. And you'll be really happy at the end of the day.
There is just one more thing. Sometimes you cannot do what you love because there are financial aspects. You need to pay your bills. So at that point of time, I think it's good to have a dual career, one that pays your bill and one that keeps you happy. And once you come up to a point where you can earn from whatever you love, you can leave your nonsense job.
We're all working towards trying our best in the current moment and hoping for the best in the future. Well, that's all the time we had for today, but thank you so much, Sanika, for joining us today on our second episode of Nomads Podcast. If you guys want to, yeah, of course, it was wonderful talking to you, and we hope everyone had a great time listening and hearing all of her wisdom. We'll have some of the links of the things that we mentioned in this podcast in the episode description. And if you want to learn more about Sanika and all the incredible things that she's done, and also watch her really cute video that I absolutely love, you can check out her website and connect with her on LinkedIn in the description below.
Thank you so much, Sanya and Connie, for inviting me for this podcast. This has been a lovely experience, and I just more power to you and your mission. Build more nomads.
Thank you so much, Sanika. It was great to hear your story. Just like me, I think many will be motivated after this podcast comes out, after this episode comes out. We are Nomads, and that's it for this week. This is Sunny.
And this is Connie.
Signing off for now. Bye.